Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, he is one of my personal favorite reads. I always make sure to read him when he writes, and you can always listen to the College Football Inquirer as well, which is always a great listen with Pat Forty, Ross Dellinger. You can get it wherever you get your podcast. He is Dan Wetzel. Dan, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, and we talked last night, a lot of Buckeye dominance, man. Buckeye dominance. Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's blew me away, man. Like, one of those things, I had been sitting here watching this team and just continuously going, why hasn't this clicked? Why aren't you just throwing the ball up to Jeremiah Smith and saying, this guy's better than everybody else? You've got Emeka Egbuka. Throw it to him as well. Like, why are we attempting to almost try to purposely play left-handed? And it felt like in that Tennessee game, after the Michigan game, Dan, they basically went, hey, we're going to play right-handed and to hell with the rest of you.
Like, we're going down swinging. They remind me of old-school Mike Tyson at this point. You can't knock a team out like they're gonna play all 60 minutes, but they basically knock them out right off the bat. I am sure scripting the offensive plays just perfectly, and they're going to Smith, and then they're like, oh, you're going to double and a half Smith. Oh yeah, Egbuka, you know, and Will Howard is throwing dimes, and it is just, it's everything that we thought we would see all year, and we see in flashes. And then now, yeah, it's just, they're just coming out. It's like the other, it's like, what's this old line? Like, everyone's got a plan to, they get punched in the mouth or something like that. That's what Tennessee and Oregon looked like in these two games. Like, okay, this is our game plan. And it's like, boom, how's 21 zip treating you? Yeah, we're going to need a new game plan. And then the one thing that ever since the Nebraska game, and I know that was a close game, and I don't remember the exact details. The Buckeye fans will know better than I, but I remember that defense stiffening in that game. And in my recollection, since that moment, I was like, okay, this is a really good defense. And even as bad as the Michigan game was, and as poorly coached as that was on the offense, and how painful that loss was, the defense was fine. That wasn't the problem. It was the offense. And so as long as you've got that defense, you've always got a chance, and they've got that defense, and it was just terrorizing Oregon. I mean, 8 sacks, just no running attack, anything. When you lead 31-34 zip and the other team still only scores only gets 278 yards, like, and they're just chucking it every time, and you got a good quarterback. So it's astounding to see Ohio State right now, but they remind me of Mike Tyson, and, maybe there's a Buster Douglas out there, but boy, he's going to have to get, famously from Columbus, by the way, but he's going to have to come up big. I don't know who it is.
I mean, I don't, I don't either, because I mean, you of course watched the entire college football playoff. I had an eye on a good chunk of it along the way, and even watching those teams this weekend, it was like, oh man, what the Buckeyes are doing to anybody. They're not stopping this. They're not getting to Will Howard fast enough to cause this. And not to mention the two running backs on top of that. I mean, they seem to have stumbled into something with, you know, Henderson and Junkins as well, where it's like, oh, you're going to try to triple, quadruple team Jeremiah Smith? Well, then here's these two. Good luck.
Yeah, and that was it, right? The two strong runners. I mean, they went out and got Judkins for, it was an embarrassment of riches, because Henderson's good enough to, you know, to go, they just go take Ole Miss's number one back. And, yeah, you can't, how do you cover this team? I said this on our podcast, but I remember, and I don't know if you remember it, but the day last year on signing day, Ryan Day was doing his press conference, and Smith hadn't, his paperwork hadn't come in. And there was a massive push at the end by Miami and Florida State to a degree to keep him home. And it was, you know, who knows what's true or what's not, but it was a lot of like buzz. He might stay, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're going through, it's all the way in the afternoon of signing day, and his paperwork has not come through. And then they, while Ryan Day's at the podium, they alert him that Smith has come in, and he's allowed then by NC rules to discuss the signing, right? And he does this sort of like fake, faint kind of knee buckle, and he exhales like, whew, man, is that like a relief. And I was watching that game yesterday and thinking of that moment, like how you can see why they sign a lot of great players at Ohio State, but why the head coach had that reaction to this player. It's like, where even without him, as good as his team is, they aren't this good without him. Like, there's no substitution. He could be the number one pick in the draft this year if they would let him. And so it's just like, yeah, this, you can see why he did that, because now he's got the Lamborghini, and he's got two games to go to win the national title.
Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, joining us at Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And does this save Ryan Day's job? Can we put that conversation to bed?
I think that unless they got, I always thought they had to be listless and blown out against Tennessee. And then maybe if in that case, it's either not a firing, but it's some kind of like, I need to go do something else. Like, it just would have been untenable, right? If that had happened, if they had played offensively the way they did against Michigan, and there's 30,000 people in orange singing Rocky Top and everyone leaves, that would have been different. But I thought once they did that, I mean, look, people are like, oh, he's playing with house money now. No, I think everyone thinks they should win the national title. He's actually reversed it back to where if they don't win it, everyone will be kind of surprised. But Ryan Day is a really good coach, and Ohio State is an exceptional program, and Michigan ain't in this thing. You know, he's going to have to figure out the Michigan bit, and maybe it's the realization that stop trying to be tougher than Michigan, because you probably won't be, and just do this. You know, you're built to beat SEC teams. You're built to beat national teams. You built this offense. You go recruit all over the country to get the best players so that you can do the things you're doing right now. Michigan's a different animal, but if you're going to go, then you build your roster this way, and then you sit there for this one game and say, we have to out-tough them, we have to outrun them, we have to be meaner, you know, taking the rivalry too seriously, just so in your head, you're playing into Michigan's hands. And Michigan, you can beat Michigan, but it's hard to be tougher than Michigan. I don't know if anyone watched that bowl game against Alabama, Michigan-Alabama. Like, I mean, look, this is not Michigan has no quarterback, but man, are they tough. Like, they pushed Alabama around. That is a tough team. Not a good team, not a great team, but it's a tough team. And you don't normally see Alabama get pushed around like that. That's their program, and it's just a different program. But Ohio State doesn't have to beat Michigan to win national titles. It certainly wants to beat Michigan, but that's a different thing. So, I think he's safe on his job, but he obviously has a lot of pressure of everyone looking and going, yeah, we should be touchdown plus favorites the rest of the way.
The other thing that really stood out to me in that game, Dan, was the fact that it felt like Caleb Downs, there was like they cloned him. Like, it felt like there were two Caleb Downs on the field at any given point because that dude was everywhere. Does that further hammer home how important it is to hit the transfer portal and just pay for the top-tier guys? Are we going to see more of that, you think, thanks to Caleb Downs?
Well, yeah, the hard part is you got to – everybody wants that guy, right? But just to take a step back from Ohio State, and we're going to see what Notre Dame does later today. But for a long time in the sport – the teams in the North could not really compete with the teams in the South. Urban Meyer got there at Ohio State, and he built a recruiting infrastructure to get there, and they won one national title. But there were a lot of, you know, Clemson smoked them one time and this, and then the Michigans, the Notre Dames, the Penn States, they could not compete with the South. You take a step back now with this transfer portal and the ability for teams in the North to – It used to be to win a national title, you needed like four straight top five recruiting classes. You had to just stockpile talent because that's what Alabama and Georgia and LSU and Clemson were doing. Now you can pick and go, hey, I'm going to grab this guy. And it could be a Caleb Downs. It could be like last year Michigan grabbed a safety from UMass. But they pick and choose, we're a little weak here at line. We can go get that guy. And it's allowed these teams in the North because they got NIL money and they got it's a great opportunity to fill out these rosters. And I don't think it's a surprise that Michigan wins the national title last year. I certainly could see Ohio State winning the national title. I could see Ohio State playing Penn State in the championship game. Notre Dame's really good. Like, it's a different sport now. And the schools in the Big Ten and Notre Dame being whatever you want to call that, or certainly Northern, have a different ability to compete.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. We've dressed over 20,000 wedding parties, and most of our business comes from referrals. Why? Because we make it so easy. Tight timeline? No problem. Groomsmen scattered all over? We got you. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Come see me at Knicks Menswear, and let's make this the easiest win for your wedding planning. Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
With the teams in the South that they didn't have 5, 7, 8 years ago. So, again, you look at this Ohio State team, they were going to be really good no matter what. But you add Judkins, you add Downs, You get a new center, you do a few things, and they filled the little gaps that might have cost them in the past. And I think you can see that. You saw that again with Michigan last year. As they go 15-0, win it all. Penn State's better because of the transfer portal. It's a different sport, and I think that's really exciting for teams in the North.
Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, joining us. All right, Dan, let's take the half step back and look at everybody. Do we take anything away from the fact that Oregon, Arizona State, Boise State, and we'll see what ends up happening tonight with the fourth one But
yeah,
that they all got off to such slow starts to begin with, and Arizona State was able to roar back, but it seemed like Oregon couldn't really dig themselves out of that hole, and it seemed like Boise State couldn't dig themselves out of that hole as well. Do you think that's competition, or do you think the bye may have something to do with it?
It's hard because it's a small sample, right? Boise State, I thought, did get to – they looked shell-shocked. Arizona State looked shell-shocked, and Oregon did. All three of the teams coming off a bye. I think combined they scored 3 points in the first quarter, and they gave up 52 or something like that. They were all down. And there were special team touchdowns against them, things like that. Arizona State obviously made it a game. Boise actually did make it a game. They were not as good as Penn State – but they were close. It was close to a one-score game. There was a penalty here or there. I was really impressed with Boise State saying, all right, once we settled in, we played, and we did pretty well. They made it a good – the score isn't indicative. I thought they accounted for the – Oregon did not. I mean, they had about – they had a little – that middle eight, they did pretty well, but other than that, but that was Ohio State just steamrolling them. I don't know. Is that by the reason, or is it because, look, Penn State's better than Boise State, and Texas has got more talent, and they get a punt return? But it's certainly something to look at. Do you want the bye, or would you rather just play? Because it's not like they're playing – it's not the NFL. It's like week, right? It's you got 10 days between games and stuff like that. There's plenty of time, and it's hard for college kids to spend three and a half weeks and staying totally focused. It's such an unusual deal. So I don't know. I don't think you can totally judge it, but let's put it this way. If Notre Dame's leading 14-0 or something at the first quarter tonight over Georgia, and I would say Georgia has at least as much talent, if not more, than Notre Dame, that would be a real sign to me that the rust is a real thing.
Not to mention what you just laid out with Notre Dame as well. I mean, that's a hell of a team that Marcus Freeman has put together on top of it. And the way that they've been able to hit the portal, and now you got Georgia with a backup quarterback. I mean, I could easily see this game turning into another one where, you know, Notre Dame rolls in and just kind of hits them pretty hard in the first quarter, and we're 14-0 looking at each other going, good golly, what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I got to see Notre Dame block that Georgia defensive line. But, again, it is a different sport. It's just the Georgias don't have the depth. The Alabamas, you know, this is a little in the weeds, but if you went back and looked at the top recruiting classes on Rivals or 24/7 or whatever, Georgia, let's say Georgia's number one, Alabama's number two, the top classes. Georgia would sign like 14 of the top 100 players in the country, and Alabama would sign like 11, right? Mm-hmm. A quarter of the top 100 players, which in an NFL draft scenario would be all your top three picks. Top three, the first three rounds of the NFL draft, about 100 players. So a quarter of them are going to two teams. Now when you look at who gets the best class, it's seven of the top 100, eight. And it's still a lot, right? But there's not only do you have six, seven, eight less kids, and you extend that over 4 years, you're talking about 30 guys, you know, 25, 28 guys. But those guys are somewhere else. And then guys leave. You don't have the depth at those schools. And you know, Notre Dame had they didn't have a quarterback, but they have a good freshman quarterback, C.J. Carr, Lloyd Carr's son plays up, grandson plays up there. He's going to be good. They really like him. But for this year, they didn't have that. They go get Riley Leonard. They're a really good team. They've got more skill. It's just such a different sport now, and it's going to be really – I'm really interested in this Notre Dame-Georgia game to see whether – can Notre Dame's never been able to compete in the playoffs with the SEC teams. I mean, embarrassingly so. Let's see what they can do tonight, and it'd be a sign of what Marcus Freeman's building, and it's also a sign of the times. If Notre Dame has got – you're looking going, boy, they're kind of like close talent-wise or equal talent, because that's never been the case.
No, not at all, and especially guys wanting to go to Notre Dame because, I mean, on top of that one, like, it may sound rudimentary, man, but, boy – I don't want to go to school. You know, I'm not here to play school. Seems to stand out when you're talking Notre Dame football. Because, I mean, that's such a huge part of it is these guys want to go up there and you're going to have to live in the dorms and you're going to have to go to class and you're going to have to walk out with a degree and you're going to have a plan where everywhere else kind of had, you know, a couple ways around that.
A couple. You know, here's the other part of this when you talk about recruiting. When you're, and this is what, like, Deion Sanders and to a degree Bill Belichick is going to really trying. But when you recruit, when you're a high school junior, right, what mattered to you, right? Your friend's opinion, how close am I to mom and dad? Kids would pick schools. Proximity to the school was so important, and there's more talent in the South. You guys would be like, oh, I was choosing my two schools, and I just really like the uniform colors of this place, or I went on a campus visit and, you know, Lord knows what happened, right? It was great. That's how they pick schools. Now you're 20, 21, 22, and you've got one more year left. And you've changed a lot in those 4 years. I don't care if you go to college or college football player or not. You're a different person. A male is a different mindset at 21 than 17. Now all of a sudden it's like, where's the best fit? Or maybe it's, wait, Notre Dame's letting me get a master's degree in accounting? well, that's a heck of a deal. I'm going to go there, right? There's different – it's just a different – I don't care if I'm close to mom and dad. I don't really care if the weather's great or they got cool cars on the campus. Like, I'm looking for something else. And that's what Deion Sanders has found, is like, hey, come up here and play. You'd never consider Colorado when you're 17, but now, hey, look what I can do. And that's what I think Bill Belichick. You're going, hey, I can go play for Bill Belichick for a year or 2 years, because I'm now thinking business. And the school, it's just changed the dynamic of recruiting, and it's less about how close I am to mom and dad or how cool the stadium is or whatever. And it's more about what can I get done? And I think that's been one of the big changes in the sport. Again, we'll see. Look, Georgia could win this thing tonight, you know, 222-0. Who the heck knows? But there's a real chance we have three Northern teams in the Final Four. And that's a year after we had a final between Michigan and Washington. Like, it's just a different sport. It used to be two SEC teams in the championship game. Now, hey, there's real opportunities.
Dan, thank you for doing this, man. I could talk to you for an hour about all this good stuff. You can hear him on the College Football Inquirer. He, Ross Dellinger, Pat Forty, read him at Yahoo Sports as well. He is Dan Wetzel. Happy New Year to your family, man, and thank you for joining me.
You too. Take care.
Because exactly as Dan said, an 18 to 20-year-old is a completely different mindset than when you're 17. A 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, hell, even a 22-year-old at this point, has a completely different train of thought than it did at 17. When you're 17 years old, and I'll speak for myself. When I was 17 years old, I wanted to get as far away from my parents as humanly possible. That was number one. To the point where I actually applied to go to the University of Hawaii. I got the acceptance letter, and my parents looked at me and went, no, you will now write them a letter back thanking them for accepting you and how you will be declining going there. That was the first thing. It was like, no. You're not doing this. And that was the first thing I wanted. 2021, not the case. I wanted to be closer to home. I wanted to be closer to my parents. I wanted to be closer to my friends. I wanted to be closer to the people that I knew and loved. The other thing, too, is I was looking for a good time. I was looking for somewhere different than where I was. Only to get down there and be homesick. Only to get down there and not want to be in that position. You could see that with a college kid as well. Any of them, and especially when you're getting recruited on top of that, and you've got a high-profile coach sitting there looking you dead in the face and making you promises of how you'll be able to succeed. I didn't have that. I got to just pick and then give them money. They're in a position where they're getting, for lack of better terminology, a whole bunch of offers and are in high demand and have to look at these guys and go, no, I don't want to do that. Well, you know, that makes sense. I could go there. Hey, this opportunity best fits me. At 21, 22, if those promises are empty, the door becomes open. You heard it on the broadcast a whole bunch of times from Herbie and Chris Fowler talking about the recruiting of Caleb Downs and how they would sit there and how Jim Knowles basically was getting interviewed by Caleb Downs over what was going to take place of why he should transfer and why it made sense. These Northern teams have the cash and they have a different mindset and a different idea that they can now go to an Alabama five-star, absolute great player and sit down with them and go, hey, you would be perfect. Come my direction. Here's the cash to do it. Here's how I could set you up. And as Dan brought up the point, as much as we want to sit here and do the, you know, I'm not here to play school, the ability to get a master's in accounting from Notre Dame, that's a good poll. That's something you want. That's something that sets you up for the rest of your life. And even when you're done playing football, you're still in a position to succeed. It's a completely different world out there. And the fact that we're now hitting the point where it's turning into North versus South, like Doug LaMaurice told us so long ago, it makes it even more intriguing. It makes it better. I love where college football is right now. I know it's not as simple as it used to be. I will forever be a fan of a bygone era where if you grew up in Ohio and you would go play for one of the big name local high schools, you'd go play for, you know, your local high school, or you would go St. Ed's, you'd go St. Ignatius, you'd go Glenville, you'd go Holy Name, you would go to any of those around the area that wasn't your local public high school. And then you'd want to play for Ohio State. It's not the world we're living in anymore. We are now in a position where, A, it's so much easier to see every team now. You know, you would understand why someone could be an Oregon fan, and you'd be able to see every single Oregon game on TV now. You know, we're not in the world anymore where we're only seeing one or two teams. Gosh, a college football Saturday, you need like six TVs to watch everything. It's awesome. It's everything a sports fan could dream of. You know, you're no longer in that realm. And on top of that, now with the transfer portal, these kids can get what they want. They can make the moves that they want to. They can better themselves. They can better their families. I think the Caleb Downs thing is fascinating for the Buckeyes and how they were able to sit down with that kid and convince him to come here. I think we are going to see more and more of that from a lot of different teams, and that is going to become the future of the transfer portal. Guys who are like, it's not like I'm unhappy where I am, but I think there's a better opportunity for me, not only here when it comes to playing football, but my ability to have a career after football. A little bit of news coming down for you as well, courtesy of Daryl Ryder, our Cleveland sports beat reporter, sends out something there on the artist formerly known as Twitter. The Browns have purchased the 176 acres of land in Brook Park for the proposed $2.4 billion dome plus $1 billion mixed-use development project. So now the Haslams officially own that piece of land. Before, it had always been hypothetical. They had offers. They had all of that kind of stuff. But our own Daryl Ryder reporting, hey, the Browns own that land now. Folks, the dome is a go. The dome is happening. There's nothing we can do about it. If you are a fan of outdoor football and liked all the elements and all of that kind of stuff, that's out the window. The dome is happening. Now, who's going to pay for the dome? That's a lot of discussion, and that still is to be hashed out. I wonder where it all plays out. I wonder how it all goes. But boy, oh boy, the fact that the Haslams own that chunk of land and now officially have the deed to it tells you all you need to know. The negotiations are done. This is now going to be in the hands of billable hours. This is now going to be in the hands of lawyers. This is now going to be in the hands of courtrooms. But we know where the Haslams are going to end up with this whole thing. It's going to end up in Brook Park. The question is how much of the city's money is going to be spent? Because they're already spending a chunk of it on lawyers right now. We'll see where it goes. 216-474-0092 at the Sports Feller on Twitter. Chris Fedor joins us next to talk about a great Cavalier win over their old buddy LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. 1 o'clock, Jeremy Fowler, and around that 1:30 area, Kevin Stefanski is going to be live from Berea. You are not going to want to miss that. Dan Menigan in for Basket of Phelps, 92 through the Fan. After a big, big, big win over the Los Angeles Lakers in a game that was kind of weird for a little bit until the Cavs decided to take off. We bring in our buddy. He is Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, and the Plain Dealer. Read him every single day. He's as good as they come. How are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, man? How are you?
Not much, dude. Happy New Year to you and the family, but first half.
Same to you. It was third straight New Year's, I think. Third, maybe fourth. Being on the road for New Year's, it seems like an annual tradition for the Cavs to be away from home.
That's funky. I never thought of it that way. You're right. Mm-hmm. They have been off dialing. All right, so Let me look at that Laker game for a second, because it kind of felt like, at least for a half or so, that the Cavs felt very comfortable playing at a Lakers slow pace, and that they were willing to let LA just kind of dictate tempo until they decided to kick it on. Did you sense the same thing?
I just think the thing is, when it comes to the Cavs, Dan, is that they're willing to play any kind of style. Like, they're not married to one specific way of playing, and I think that's what makes them so dangerous. I think that's what makes them so equipped to go on a deep run in the postseason. And I think that's what makes them so difficult for opponents to handle. There's this unpredictability. Like, obviously we understand how they want to play, how they would prefer to play, but there's an unpredictability within that that makes it really, really difficult for opponents. They can play big, they can play fast, they can play slow, they can play inside, outside, it doesn't matter. Like, they're comfortable and they're equipped to play a bunch of different kinds of ways. And Kenny Atkinson said, you know, early on in the game, they were trying to do some different things offensively and they were stuck in the mud because of the way that the Lakers were defending them. And they made halftime adjustments. And then they came out in the third quarter and they operated a different kind of way on the offensive end based on how they were being defended by the Lakers. And being able to do that on the fly and being able to show that ability is something that has been there since basically opening night for the Cavs. And I just think because of the way that their roster is constructed and because of, you know, Kenny's acumen as a coach and because of the familiarity that the guys have with one another, they can adjust on the fly like that, and they can almost dictate terms based on who's out there for them and who they're playing against.
You're 100% right on that, and it's been the most fascinating thing with this team the entire season, is just the fact that they are so able. You know, I always called it playing left-handed. You know, it was the old Bill Belichick phrase of, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to make you play left-handed. It's almost like the Cavaliers have decided this season that our goal is to become ambidextrous. We still have high screen and roll. We could still run this. We could still put Donovan Mitchell in position to exceed Darius Garland. But now we have brought this other side of it to almost a higher level that maybe we're not full-blown ambidextrous right now. But boy, if you're going to make us play left-handed where we got to go through the bigs and we got to go through Evan Mobley and move without the ball and all of those ideas, we could do that too. And that's been the best part of watching this team, Chris, is what Kenny Atkins has been able to do when they're like, hey, we're going to play left-handed. Let's go.
Yeah. And they're diversifying, Dan. They're diversifying, you know, who's involved on a possession-to-possession basis, right? You know, in years past, it was going to run through Darius and Donovan, and every team in the NBA knew that. Because of where Evan Mobley was in terms of his development, because of how the Cavs just wanted to function offensively, but now you've got the evolution of Evan Mobley and his ability to do different things. And you've got the evolution of Jared Allen and his ability to do different things. And you've got the evolution of Caris LeVert and his ability to play a different kind of way and adapt his playing style. Even at 30 years old, he's been able to do that. So yeah, it's going to be heavy with Darius and heavy with Donovan and heavy with Evan, but there are going to be actions within that. And there are going to be counters within that. And on some nights, it could be Max Strus coming off the bench, banging four threes and scoring 15 points. Other nights, it could be Caris LeVert. Other nights, George Niang could be more involved. Other nights, it could be Ty Jerome that's more involved. So there's just a diversity within this offense. Yeah, there's a hierarchy. There's no doubt about it. And every defense understands that so much of what the Cavs do are going to run through primary guys, but there are triggers that come off of that. There are counters that come off of that. There are reads that come off of that. There are random cuts that come off of that. So even if they're going to be this pick and roll heavy team because of the personnel that they have, there are different things within that pick and roll system that make it really, really difficult for an opponent to guard. And the bottom line is there is no team in the NBA that has figured out how to consistently guard the Cavs on the offensive end of the floor. They're the number one offense in the NBA, and every team that the Cavs have played against recently has raved about their offense and talked about the difficulty in terms of how to defend it because they just don't know who the offense is going to funnel through, and they just don't know when those cuts are going to happen.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, and Napoleon Dealer joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, Chris, I'm not going to lie to you. I have held a lot of Evan Mobley stock for a very long time. it is now starting to pay off. We're looking at yachts, Chris. We're looking at yachts. I mean, life is quite good. What has been the most impressive thing that you've seen to this point of the, we'll call it the Evan Mobley leap?
To me, Dan, it's the fact that he doesn't need his teammates as much anymore to create shots for him. If you look at how many of his shots, how many of his makes early in his career were assisted versus unassisted, you know, it was a striking number, and he needed a lot of help from his teammates. Now he's able to initiate offense by himself. They're running inverted pick-and-roll stuff for him. They're allowing him to attack defenders off the dribble. They're allowing him to rebound and run. And there's just a comfort that he's playing with. There's an empowerment that he has on this team. Like, Donovan has made a point of emphasis to empower him and Darius Garland because of how important that is for not just the here and now, but the future for this organization. Kenny Atkinson has empowered Evan. There's a belief that he's playing with. There's a comfort that he's playing with. But there's a freedom that he's playing with as well. And I think because he's been empowered, Evan is somebody, Dan, who has been basically programmed throughout his entire career to make the right play over and over and over again. And I think there was some nagging thought that he had in his head early in his career playing alongside the guys that he was playing alongside of, is a jump shot really the best thing for this offense? Is me shooting from the perimeter really the best thing for this offense? And I think there was some hesitation within his game of, you know, would I be better off passing the ball back to Donovan or Darius? Would I be better off, you know, pump faking and trying to drive to the basket? There's just no hesitation to what he's doing. There's a freedom to what he's doing. There's a confidence to what he's doing. And I think he understands now that Evan Mobley attacking off the dribble, Evan Mobley pulling up from three, Evan Mobley in a catch-and-shoot situation is one of the best things for the Cavs offense. And once he got that level of belief, I think you saw this takeoff from Evan. But the thing to me that stands out the most is just all of the things that he can do on his own that he didn't have the ability to do as much as consistently early in his career.
And it's funny because I think on top of it, I think some of that is just growing up. I think some of that is, yeah, becoming your own person over time. And on top of it, he, you know, physically grew up. He put a little bit of muscle on. He can actually hang under the basket and doesn't get pushed around. I mean, he's always a very, very talented on the defensive end, but now he's got that little bit of muscle on him just from growing up, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so many people need to understand that development, it is not linear. And just because one guy developed at a certain pace, whether it was Giannis, whether it was AD, whether it was Chris Bosh, didn't mean that Evan was going to develop at that same pace. It had to be what was best for him and what was best for the Cavs. And yeah, there's a maturity to his game. There's more physicality to his game. There's more aggressiveness to his game. And I remember talking to Evan, this was probably in November. I said, like, what clicked for you? Did something click, or was this just something that you naturally believed was going to happen eventually? And he said, yeah, like something clicked. Obviously the Boston series was a big step in my development. Jarrett wasn't there. Donovan wasn't there. Karis wasn't there at the end of that series. So it was kind of a lot on me and I had to figure it out. And I had the freedom and the opportunities and the touches and all that kind of stuff. But he also said, like, I had to grow up. Like, this is something that I believed was going to happen in my career, but it was just something that was going to take time. And you can't just like snap your finger and say, I want to become a 3-point shooter, or snap your finger and say, I want to start initiating offense out of the pick and roll and be comfortable doing that and being equipped to do that. You have to work on that over time. And maybe it's been slower than some fans have wanted, but it probably would have happened last year if he didn't miss 6 weeks with a knee injury.
Yeah, it blows me away, Chris. Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, and the Plain Dealer joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The ultimate your team is good question. Are there too many guys on this team? Do too many people need to play?
I don't know how Kenny is going to do all this. I continue to answer this the same kind of way, Dan, and he's got his hands full. I mean, you're already seeing a phase out of Ty Jerome, and Ty is somebody who, you know, at various points throughout the course of this year, the Cavs were pumping up for Sixth Man of the Year, and he was playing to that level, and he was really, really impactful. But they don't even have Isaac Okoro yet. They don't even have the 11 in their rotation, and Ty Jerome's getting, what, 6 minutes, a half, basically? That is a significant difference from what it was at the beginning of the year. But there's only so many minutes, and there's only so many opportunities for these guys to go around. And when they have all 11, I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, the belief is that Kenny's going to try and play all 11. And he's just going to kind of, like, pick a couple of minutes from some of these higher-minute guys and see if he can spread those across the back end of the roster. But I think, you know, Sam Merrill is kind of in dangerous water here. I don't think it's going to be a situation, Dan, where Kenny just takes somebody out of the rotation completely. I don't think he believes he can do that. And I think he believes he has 11 guys that deserve an opportunity that have earned it. But when you're talking about the lesser minutes per night, I think Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill are the guys that are most in danger of, you know, being not overly thrilled with the role that they're going to have based on what the role has been that they've had, throughout the course of the season. So it's going to be an adjustment for a lot of different guys, but I think those two guys specifically. And I think the other thing is people around the NBA, Dan, and I reported this a couple of days ago, people around the NBA believe that the Cavs are going to try and do something at the trade deadline. And I don't think there's anybody that's looking at them as primed for a significant roster shakeup or a significant loss to this roster. But I think a lot of people are saying, you know, is Ty available? Is Sam Merrill available? What are you going to do with George Niang? What's the plan with Isaac Okoro? Yeah, Craig Porter's playing in the G League. Jalen Tyson might spend more time in the G League moving forward. What's the plan with Jalen Tyson? So I think teams are looking at the Cavs as a potential team that would be looking for a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 type deal to just clear up the logjam and get them out of the luxury tax. That remains to be seen if they're going to go that direction, but it's certainly something to monitor given, you know, how many playable guys they have on this roster and the amount of available time that's available to all of them.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, and Napoleon Dealer. Thank you for joining me, buddy. I appreciate it as always. Such great insight. Always read them every single day. Happy New Year to you, my friend, and talk soon.
You got it, brother. Anytime.